It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Do I support impeachment of Rod Rosenstein? No, I do not.
The House Speaker characterized the articles of impeachment filed by the House Freedom Caucus as an extreme step.
I don't think we should be cavalier with this process or with this term. I don't think that this rises to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors.
Among the allegations, the Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein has a conflict of interest overseeing the Russia probe because he signed the final surveillance warrant for Trump campaign aide Carter Page, based in part on the unverified Trump dossier. Months earlier, the former British spy behind the dossier, Christopher Steele, was fired by the FBI for lying. Steele also admitted his hatred for candidate Trump. According to the articles of impeachment, quote, Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein's failure to recuse himself in light of this inherent conflict of interest constitute dereliction of duty.
It was very frustrating to hear the speaker call our efforts cavalier. Christopher Steele lied to the FBI. Rod Rosenstein knew that and was so cavalier that he thought that his information was still a basis to spy on people associated with the Trump campaign.
Democrats claim the goal is discrediting Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia probe.
Just when you think you have seen it all, Republicans have no shame to go to a place where they would undermine our judicial system.
If it's in the service of this president, that's all they care about.
A charge one key Republican denies.
I haven't discussed it with the president, and so I can tell you at this point who the president hires and fires is certainly not going to be influenced by something that this member of Congress does.
In Boston, the attorney general said House Republicans should refocus and defended the department's number two.
My deputy, Rod Rosenstein, is highly capable. I have the highest confidence in him. We need Congress to deal with the immigration question.
The Justice Department fails to provide the withheld records. A Republican aide said tonight they have a commitment from leadership to hold a vote on a contempt resolution after the recess in early September, insisting impeachment remains on the table.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. Good morning. Happy Friday. And so that's part of what yesterday brought. There's another big part of this, so just hang on. But let me stop and just sit on this for a second. You heard the first voice. It was Speaker Paul Ryan rushing to the mic after we discussed yesterday the fact that 11 members of the House, including Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows, their leader leading this, were furious that Rod Rosenstein, again, refused to turn over documents, handed them what? That the FISA warrant just this week handed over was redacted. Two-thirds of it was redacted. Part of the redaction was the fact that Peter Strzok was really good friends with the FISA judge. They actually had been in each other's homes. Yeah, that was redacted because, you know, it's national security. But that's the kind of thing, that's the kind of nonsense. And so Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows and others have just had it. And that's why they said Rod Rosenstein, who had threatened House staffers for trying to get information, had said he will not be he will not be blackmailed or some such term. Extorted, that was the term he used. I will not be extorted. As though Congress asking for rightful information about to conduct their oversight were extorting the Justice Department. It's bizarre. So you heard Paul Ryan rush to the mic to say, "Oh no, that's way too far. I don't support that." Well, what else is that not typical of Paul Ryan? Has he ever done anything less? How many times has he rushed to the microphone to undermine President Trump on various things? He never wants to do anything. The only thing that he wants to take initiative on is to help friends on K Street. That means big business interests, lobbyists. That it just seems to be the thing that drives him. So now Kevin McCarthy and Steve Scalise, of course, I don't know where it stands, to be honest with you. Kevin McCarthy is the most likely to throw his hat in the ring, but my understanding is he doesn't have the votes. So to run for speaker. And that's the point I'm trying to make. So Paul Ryan, weak beyond measure, always undermining those that actually want to do something. You can't imagine the palpable hate that that Paul Ryan and Speaker McConnell have for conservatives. If ever anything made them angry, it's that. If they can't get their the bottom half of their body off the couch to do anything else, they can get it off the couch to criticize or undermine things that conservatives are doing. I could give you a dozen examples. But okay, so that's how that's played out. Now, it looks like in terms of the impeachment, it looks to me like Congressman Meadows and Congressman Jordan have at least are holding, they've already filed this now with the Judiciary Committee. It can be brought on the floor at any time. So it's just there. And they don't have to have the Speaker's permission to bring it up. Now, Congress is going home today, so they're not back until later in August or early September. Not sure the date. They are talking now about contempt. So who knows? Judge Dineen will be joining us this morning, and I'll ask her about what she thinks about that. So we'll talk about that again with her. But the next thing that really was wonderful from my perspective happened yesterday. And the thing that I noticed was that there was no real report from Fox. It was just like a passing remark by Mike Emanuel hosting for Brett Baer last night in special report. And the passing remark was, oh, and Jim Jordan has decided he wants to be Speaker of the House. And then moving on to another news story. You have to understand that Fox, again, is there, except for some hosts, they have more of an affinity with the Paul Ryans and Mitch McConnells. They just do. And so that's the way it usually comes down. And they don't want, I'm sure, the powers that be, whoever at Fox, they don't want Jim Jordan being Speaker. That would be really inconvenient. But that's not going to stop people who think he is a leader like no other in the Congress right now. A man among men, a man capable of leading. I want you to hear what he said this morning on Fox and Friends when he was asked why it is that you want to run for Speaker. Here it is.
Well, think about it this way. In the last year and a half under President Trump, regulations are down, taxes are down, the economy is up. We're going to get great numbers today. Unemployment's at its lowest in 20 years. Gorsuch is on the court. Kavanaugh is on deck. We're out of the crazy Iran deal. The embassy's in Jerusalem, and the hostages have come back from North Korea. An amazing year and a half.
And remains are coming back today.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm forgetting some other good things. So that's by anyone's definition, that's an amazing year and a half. But think about Congress. What has Congress done? We've certainly helped with the taxes. But all those other things that we told the American people we would accomplish.
Repeal and replace.
Repeal Obamacare, reform welfare, build the border security wall, and fix our immigration system and control spending. We haven't done that. So I think this is real simple. I always say this. We make the job of being a member of Congress way too difficult. It's really basic. What did you tell the voters you were going to do? Mm-hmm. Let's do that. And we haven't done enough of that. We need to do more of that and help President Trump make America great again and do the things that we said.
So that was Jim Jordan this morning on Fox and Friends. By the way, he'll be our guest here on Monday morning. But here's the thing. Daniel Horowitz has a great article. The title is Jim Jordan's Run for Speaker is the Last Chance to Save Congress. In part, Daniel says, for far too long, Republicans have had leadership that fundamentally accepts the policy premises, priorities, and messaging of the status quo swamp. To that end, leaders only bring up nanny state fiscal bills and open borders initiatives, but won't allow any number of good, innovative, conservative ideas to even come to the floor. The only thing they're willing to do is cut taxes, and they plan on using the tax issue every year as a political morphine to mask the pain of every other policy betrayal. We're going to put that on our Facebook page. That's Daniel's latest article. Jim Jordan's run for Speaker is the last chance to save Congress. Jim Jordan sent a letter out at noon yesterday to the members of his Republican caucus. Beautiful letter. Dear Republican colleague, he says, in November 2016, voters resoundingly rejected the status quo in Washington by electing an out-of-the-box Republican to drain the swamp and change how this town works. And then he says, so far, President Trump has made them proud. Then he recites the accomplishments, but then he goes on to talk about the failures of the Congress, and he lays out a vision. He said, I encourage you to test some of these ideas with your constituents in August, actually repealing Obamacare, passing across-the-board welfare reform that requires able-bodied adults to work in order to get benefits, building a border security wall and reforming our broken immigration system, making it fairer for highly skilled people who want to come here legally, making the 2017 tax cuts permanent, ending taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood, enacting meaningful, immediate spending cuts to ensure that we never see trillion-dollar deficits. If we were to just do those basic things between now and November, voters would be inspired to give us a chance to run this place again. So with that, Jim Jordan, there's much more to the letter, but that gives you an idea. He announced to his caucus that he's running. Now, here's the thing. This is your part. The American Family Association is getting behind this campaign of Jim Jordan. We believe he is the right man. We believe it's crucial that he had that position because he has the courage. You know, it's funny. He's a reluctant leader because he's a wonderful man. It's not that he can't lead. Heavens, he was an award-winning coach and wrestler, respected by everyone, even if his policies are not shared by all of them. And he has the courage to stand up against, you know, to stand up on what he doesn't wave in the wind. It's just kind of an amazing thing. And so this is your part. If you are a voter, which most of you are, your states may be still having primaries. Many of them are coming up next week, in the first week of August. So I beg you to pay attention. And one of the questions you might want to ask candidates is, will you vote for Jim Jordan for speaker? Certainly in the general, that needs to be asked. But by the time you get to the general, you don't have as many conservative options as you have in the primaries. So you must engage in the primaries that are left in the states that we have. You must find out who the candidates are, support them financially, work for them in the streets. And then I think a question to ask them is, would you support Jim Jordan for Speaker of the House? That's a good question. All right. Several other things happened yesterday. I want you to hear this. President Trump was in Iowa and Granite City, Illinois, and this is what he said.
3 years ago, the flood of subsidized imports and the tidal wave of unfair trade targeting our steel industry and, frankly, lots of other industries. It finally caught up with Granite City Steel. Hundreds of workers were laid off. Your two beautiful blast furnaces were idled, and the lifeblood of this community was drained. Over the last two decades, nearly two-thirds of American raw steel companies went out of business. More than one-third of the steel jobs vanished. We need steel mills for national security. Remember that. This isn't just price. This isn't just, gee, we could do it for a little bit less. We need it for national security. Our steel towns became ghost towns. More than 70,000 hardworking Americans lost their jobs, their hope, and their way of life. You people know it better than anybody. Other countries cheated and broke the rules. They subsidized their industries. They targeted our factories, our workers, our countries. They went after our companies, and they stole our intellectual property like it never even belonged to us, like it wasn't our idea in the first place.
All right, that was just part of what the president said. It was remarkable, and that's the reopening of a steel plant, and there are many others opening around the country. As he laid out, you know, what's happened, the devastation of closing these plants and the loss of American workers, and certainly in Granite City, I think at least four people came up on the stage and gave their personal stories of what had happened to them in the past few years. The heartbreak of the plant shutting down, the effect on their families, the loss. One man said he had three kids in college at the time, and it was just very, very moving, I have to say. And the president said to them, you know, I could be one of you. I could be one of you. It was a pretty moving thing. And so the economy, there's a lot more to what the numbers are. But today we are expecting an announcement on a really good number on the gross domestic product. Most accounts are saying it's going to be something above 4%. A real optimistic report say it might even hit 5%. That would be amazing. And so it's not just the economy, though. We can't sell our souls for money or prosperity. We can't. But there are many things, just like the pastor getting out of the jail in Iran. We are grateful to this president for all the promises he has kept. All right, stay tuned because Judge Jeanine Pirro is my next guest. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Netflix continues to ignore the outcry about 13 Reasons Why.
The American Family Association, along with Parents Television Council and several other pro-family groups, have reached out to the streaming service, urging the cancellation of their program. Netflix has not even responded to our letter. Instead, they released an even more vile Season 2 and are producing Season 3. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings says their program is engaging and that it fosters discussion of taboo topics like suicide and sexual assault. But at what cost? 14-year-old Anna Bright and several other teens have committed suicide after watching the show. Hastings calls our objections propaganda. Does he feel the profitability of his company is worth more than the lives damaged or lost because of his show? Please sign our petition to Netflix, learn more, and share our action alert when you visit AFA.net. And pray Reed Hastings will recognize the dangers of 13 Reasons Why.
How are things going in your home? Everything perfect? Do the siblings get along? Does everyone speak with respect all the time? Of course not. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Struggle is a natural part of growing up. And if you have a teen in your home, you know they don't keep that tension to themselves. The drama spreads to everyone under the roof. But in the midst of the hassle and heartache, we must never forget that nothing can separate us from God's love and care. That's not just a cliche. That's the hope mom and dads can cling to when things go a little bonkers. If we could actually see what God is up to, we'd be singing during those painful times. Let's trust God for His grace when family life gets a little chaotic.
Mark Gregston is devoted to helping parents of struggling teens. Find his small group curricula online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The University of Minnesota is considering a new policy that would punish faculty and students who use the wrong pronouns. They call it the pronoun rule. The policy designed to protect transgender people from being misgendered. That's the term they use when you call someone by a name or personal pronoun they no longer use. Let's say a professor calls on Darlene during a class, but Darlene is now Larry. Well, that professor would face disciplinary action up to firing. Let's say a student refers to a classmate as he, when in fact he might be she, or she identifies as Z. That student could face expulsion. The university says the policy is the most ambitious of its kind in the country, covering everything from pronouns to bathrooms. The end result is to be welcoming and respectful to everyone. I wonder what the penalty is for leaving the toilet seat up in a gender-neutral bathroom. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Did you just point at me?
Yes!
Listen, I don't have Trump derangement. Let me tell you what I have.
Okay.
I have a lot of... I'm tired of people starting a conversation with Mexicans or liars and rapists. I'm tired of people starting a conversation about this country. Listen, I'm 62 years old. There have been a lot of people in office that I didn't agree with, but I have never, ever seen anything like this. I've never seen anybody whip up such hate. I've never seen anybody be so dismissive. And clearly you don't watch the show, so you don't know that I don't suffer from that. What I suffer from is the inability to figure out how to fix this. That's my issue. But one of the things that you talk about a lot, and I'm curious about it, is the deep state. How long has the deep state been there, and who's running it?
Well, I want to answer your question because you had your opening statement, which was how horrible it is that Donald Trump is talking about all of these people. You know what's horrible?
You know what's horrible?
What's horrible
when the president of the United States whips up people to beat the lot of people.
No.
Say goodbye.
Let me go.
All right, that was The View. It was probably a week ago yesterday. Everybody's heard that. We played it, so you've heard it. And you certainly are familiar with Judge Jeanine Pirro, who is the host of Justice with Judge Jeanine. And of course, that had to be very difficult. But I think one thing that we saw was we got a window into Judge Jeanine's character. For example, her commentary the Sunday night after that happened, Saturday night, was incredible to me. Because Jeanine talked about how this is not about her. It's really an illustrative of the divide and the anger that has been created between us, our families, our friends, because she and Whoopi Goldberg have been personal friends. And so there was more to that than just this public argument. Judge Jeanine joins us this morning, and we're not going to spend our time on this, Judge, but I just want to ask you, in your soliloquy or your commentary the first night out, you talked compellingly about this divide between us and our families. I'd just like for you to say a word about that. And good morning, first of all.
Well, good morning, Sandy. It's great to be with you. And forgive my voice. I'm a little hoarse. But there is a divide. And, you know, I've always believed in what I believe in. And, you know, I just kind of go along and talk about what I believe in. I don't think in America we've ever seen a scenario where the left is so determined to shut us down. And as I said, it was a microcosm, what happened to me on The View, and then getting thrown out of the building by Whoopi and with my staff, is an example of the intolerance of the left and the inability of the left to even listen. And, you know, they call us fascists. Well, fascism is when you only tolerate one way of thinking and everything else is shut down. And that's what the left is doing, whether we're trying to come on a university campus or simply having a discussion. Look, I was invited on The View to talk about my book, Liars, Leakers, and Liberals. I accepted their invitation. And as you heard, the wheels went off the wagon in the second segment. And anyone can watch that on YouTube. You know, what is going on is the left just wants to shut us down. And we're not allowed to speak anymore. Well, what happened to the Constitution, the First Amendment, freedom of speech? What happened, you know, when I sat on my bench, Sandy, you know, it said, "In God we trust," above my bench. All of a sudden, that is intolerance. You know, they don't want to know this. Even the words law and order send them into a frenzy. And so my book is really an effort to kind of confront that and talk about what has happened in terms of America. And Americans instinctively realize we needed to elect an outsider president because something was awry, but we didn't know how bad it was until he got into the Oval Office and the veil was dropped. And we saw them trying to use the Department of Justice and FBI to drag or attempt to drag a corrupt woman across the presidential finish line. And were she not to win, which of course she didn't, they were going to tee up a Russia collusion investigation so that they could disenfranchise us and the man that we put in the Oval Office.
Let me just say that Judge Jeanine's book, she's already mentioned the title, but it is called Liars, Leakers, and Liberals, and she never did get to talk about it on The View, but we would like to talk about it a little bit. You know, Judge Jeanine, every one of us can identify, again, I wanted to make this personal, that you are very poorly treated on The View, no question about it, but you and I have both been in situations where professional people treat us very badly because of our views. I've certainly had my share of that, but she is a friend, and so there must have been some hurt to that. And my point is, each of us can relate to that because this divide has gone down into the marrow of American life, families, and all of the rest. Now, but what I want to ask you about is in your opening to your book, you talk about, because you know the Trump family, you talk about the effects on them. I often think about that, and actually, honestly, I pray for them a lot. I don't know how they bear it, but just a word on how all of this barrage and hatred has affected them.
Well, you know, it's interesting. They are a very strong family. And as I say in the book, I mean, Donald Trump is a force of nature. I mean, this guy can go into a dental alliance and come out with his, you know, his jacket and tie straight and, you know, a lion's head to put in the library wall. But, you know, I speak with the president, and as I say in the book, you know, I've known him for well over two decades. And, you know, he is a force of nature. He is a different kind of guy. He has succeeded in everything he's done. But as he said to me, he said, you know, Janine, my family didn't sign up for this. I did. And you obviously read the first chapter. I mean, Lara Trump, who's Eric's wife, who's a sweetheart, said that, you know, when they announced their pregnancy, the first baby Luke, you know, the hate that came across on the internet, you know, we hope you fall, we hope you have a miscarriage, it's just hateful stuff that God-fearing people would never even think of, let alone say it publicly. But for some reason, the left feels it's okay to demonize people on the right. And as I said in my open last week on Justice, I mean, it is. We're at a point in time where they just won't tolerate us, and that's fascism. Fascism is when you only tolerate one way of thinking, and everyone else is wrong. Yeah. And I tried in my open after what happened to me on ABC and Whoopi throwing me out, throwing me the F out with my staff. I tried to make it about, you know, if we've got to get back to America, where even if you believe in something totally different than a friend or a loved one, you've got to tolerate it. We tolerated it, Sandy. We never had a problem. You know, maybe you didn't like Barack Obama, but we sucked it up, and we went to the voting booth. That's not the way they think. And the leftist George Soros-funded Antifa is a danger to this country. And that's why the 2018 elections are even more important than the 2016. Americans have to stand up without fear or favor and go to the voting booth and stand up for America. And by the way, unemployment's never been this low. The GDP is through the roof. You know, the ISIS caliphate is destroyed. Think about it. 2 years ago, you know, you were wondering if you're going to be met up by someone who yells Allahu Akbar and then chops your head off. I mean, it is different. The man is working for America. He is working hard so that people can say Merry Christmas again. So the freedom of religion is something that's respected in this nation. It's a difficult time, and that's why I wrote Liars, Leakers, and Liberals. That's why I believe strongly that we've got to get back to what makes America great and just, you know, move forward as God-fearing people. As people who recognize that, you know, there is a bigger issue than just us. That, you know, this is a nation that we have to leave in good hands for our children and grandchildren.
Yep, absolutely. The book is called Liars, Leakers, and Liberals. I think it's number one on Amazon. I don't know if the New York Times bestseller list is, you know, how they sort of ignore some books. Are they ignoring yours, Janine?
No, I'm number one on the New York Times bestsellers list, and I thank you and I thank your listeners that you know that to get on the New York Times bestsellers list as a conservative or someone on the right is very difficult. But the numbers of how the American people supported this book is very much a telltale of how they want us, everybody wants to be respected. And the New York Times could not deny the numbers, Sandy.
Boy, that's great. That's great. That's really good news. You know, that's progress in itself. Hey, I want to ask you about a couple of things that are broken in the last 24 hours. You know, let me just say, I didn't give you a really proper introduction. Judge Janine is a former judge and prosecutor in the state of New York. She's authored 6 books, and she's had a ton of experience. If you listen to her, you know that. And so with that in mind, the story that broke yesterday was that Bob Mueller is now going to, I'm sorry, I can't even say this without laughing, is now going to use Donald Trump's tweets to prove obstruction of justice. Is that as funny as it sounds, or is there some there?
Well, you know, even some of the federal judges on the travel ban said they were going to use some of the comments the president used on the campaign trail against him in their judgments relating to the travel ban. Look, I've been a prosecutor and judge and a DA for 30 years. I've run for office 5 times. You, in assessing a contract, look within the 4 corners of the contract. You don't look at something that someone said, you know, 6 months ago on the campaign trail. They are turning justice on her head. They are taking the blinds off of Lady Justice and saying, you're going this way, you're not going to go that way. And that's never been done before. And they are doing it publicly in your face, and they don't care, Sandy. And that's why, you know, the way I was treated, I mean, you know, ABC is like, well, that's just the way it is. And, you know, let's just keep moving, nothing to see here. But the American people saw that there was something to see there. And when Bob Mueller, the special counsel, wants to use tweets, you know he's desperate. To me, that's an indication that he's got a very weak case, and he's looking for anything to justify his existence.
Well, that's exactly what I think, too. As a non-professional, it just seems bizarre. And, you know, I just read, there were just a few articles out this week talking, in fact, one was in CNN, talking about how they're hearing that Mueller's going to be winding down his investigation, and then this thing comes out. And so the thing that I find myself wondering is what in the world is his, what's driving him to become even ridiculous, publicly ridiculous from my perspective on that?
Well, obviously he has to justify his existence. And if you look at his team, Sandy, they're all, you know, pro-Hillary, anti-Trump. Some of them, the ethics are in the tank. Andrew Weissman, you know, has been called out by several federal judges for his inability to be fair. And, you know, I mean, even Peter Strzok was thrown off the team only because his emails came out. So, I mean, it is clear that they are on, they have an agenda, that their agenda is to destroy this president. And they're not going to stop until they find someone who's going to help them do it. And if they've got to talk to hookers and porn stars, that's darn what they're going to do.
All right. Well, then the next subject that I, of course, this is a house of political process. It's not a legal process. But this whole notion of impeaching Rod Rosenstein that was brought up by 11 members of the House, led by Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan. And then last night, the rush to the mic of Paul Ryan to say that this is we shouldn't recklessly use this and we should not do that. And so, you know, and I already talked about this with my listeners this morning, so I won't expand on that further. But I really would like to know what your thoughts about that are.
Well, I don't understand. My thoughts about what, Sammy?
Oh, about Rosenstein being impeached, brought against Rod Rosenstein.
Rod Rosenstein. Is a emergency, okay. He has no right in being in the Department of Justice. He should be impeached. Look, he's the guy who convinced Jeff Sessions to recuse himself, and Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, within 24 hours of being appointed by the president, decides that he's not going to do anything or touch anything related to the 2016 election. And he's been hiding in a closet somewhere ever since. Rod Rosenstein is the one who wrote the memo telling the president to fire Comey and now is in charge of the investigation to determine whether or not the president obstructed justice in firing Comey. Rod Rosenstein is the guy who handled the Russia case where the Russians came over to try to access our uranium and bribed anyone they could come across. And, of course, they found fertile ground in Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation. And now the Russians own 20% of our uranium. But Rod Rosenstein should be impeached. He should not be running the Department of Justice. And it's not just based on that. It's based on the fact that this guy threatened members of Congress. He threatened staffers. He refuses to hand over memos and information that Congress has a right to. You know, Congress has oversight authority over the Department of Justice. This guy is bad news, and I've been saying it for a long time.
Yeah, it's pretty creepy.
And I apologize for my voice. I am absolutely losing it, Sandy.
I know, you know, when you people need to understand when you write a book like this and you get booked back to back to back interviews, like countless, and not only that, but it's just a lot of pressure. And then to try to keep up with your show, too, and all the prep, it's tough. But listen, I appreciate you joining us because I know the demands are great on your time. The book is called Liars, Leakers, and Liberals. It's number one. Didn't know I was going to get to say this. Number one on the New York Times bestseller list and also on Amazon. So we encourage you, of course, to buy it and share it with your friends and be encouraged. Judge Dineen, you encourage all of us with your,
your toughness. Well, I appreciate it. And God bless you and God bless your listeners. This is a very important period in American history, and we have to be ever vigilant to make sure that justice and America and what we stand for is continued for the next generation. Thank you.
Betcha. God bless you, Dineen. Keep you safe, and I'll talk to you soon. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. A new biopic on Ruth Bader Ginsburg's life and legal career, titled On the Basis of Sex, is set to be released on Christmas Day. However, a huge factual error revealed in the trailer encapsulates Ginsburg's judicial philosophy. Her character stands before a male judge who says the word woman does not appear in the U.S. Constitution. Ginsburg responds, "Nor does the word freedom, Your Honor." Well, freedom is smack dab in the middle of the First Amendment. Much like her judicial career, her movie's writers find the actual verbiage of the Constitution irrelevant.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Introducing Stacey Washington, a wife, a mom, a veteran, and a champion for the biblical values this nation was founded upon.
When you listen to Stacey on the Right, you're going to hear news and information, politics, culture, family. You're going to hear scripture. You're going to hear all of that from the biblical worldview.
American Family Radio presents Stacey on the Right with Stacey Washington, beginning Monday, August 6th at 2 p.m. Central.
As followers of Christ, we've become new creations. The mistakes of our past have been washed away. Listen this week as Alistair Begg teaches from 1 Corinthians about our old sin nature and our new kingdom status. That's Monday through Friday on Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at AFR.net.
When I first found out I was pregnant, I was surrounded by fear and disbelief. My boyfriend told me at the time to get an abortion. There was no negotiating.
This is the story of a young lady who decided to keep her baby after hearing her baby's beautiful heartbeat on ultrasound. The Ministry of Preborn provides ultrasounds for pregnancy centers across America for free. When an abortion-minded woman hears her baby's heartbeat on ultrasound, she's 80% more likely to keep her baby.
My son Rent turned 5 months this week, and even though there are still uncertainties in my life, the one thing I know is I get to watch him grow.
Your gift of $140 will cover the cost of 5 ultrasounds. All donations are tax-deductible. To donate, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Trump administration has just broken new ground in the fight to advance mankind's divinely conferred and unalienable right to religious freedom. Yesterday, President Trump and Vice President Pence explicitly held the Turkish government accountable for its persecution of American pastor Andrew Brunson. Even more importantly, these leaders made clear that there would be consequences and large sanctions on Turkey if it doesn't free the pastor who is now under house arrest after nearly 2 years of brutal incarceration on preposterous charges. The Save the Persecuted Christians Coalition believes that by applying such techniques far more broadly, the United States and other governments can create powerful disincentives to the persecutors and perhaps enduring systemic relief to their victims, including the 215 million Christians around the world who do not enjoy Pastor Brunson's celebrity. Learn more, including how you can help at SaveThePersecutedChristians.org. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Does the Russian government have any compromising material on President Trump or his family?
Yeah, I did hear these rumors that we allegedly collected compromising material on Mr. Trump when he was visiting Moscow. Well, distinguished colleague, let me tell you this. When President Trump visited Moscow back then, I didn't even know that he was in Moscow. I treat President Trump with utmost respect. But back then, when he was a private individual, a businessman, nobody informed me that he was in Moscow.
Very interesting. You know, that's the part of that whole Helsinki conference that seems to me has not been reported on. And that's the fact that when American reporters who would crucify the president for not taking what they considered to be a tough public stand against President Putin, when they had a chance to ask a question, what did they ask? They ask, Mr. Putin, did President Trump talk to you about Crimea? Did he talk about Crimea to you? And secondly, sir, do you have any dirt on him or his family? They were really tough on Putin themselves, right? They really did practice what they preached. Anyway, I just wanted to remind you, because we want to talk to one of my favorite guests, truly, is Dr. Paul Kinger. He's a professor of a political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania. He is the executive director of the Center for Vision and Values. And he is the author of so many books, and he is an expert on the Cold War and communism and Russia. And I've asked him to join us this morning. Good morning, Dr. Kinger.
Hi, Sandy. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you. And I can't wait to hear what you're going to say about all of that. But I want to jump in with something practical first, because I want people to know that Grove City is getting ready to host a conference August the 10th and 11th. And the idea is government overreach and higher education. And which we all know is a huge problem, that our colleges and universities have become infestations of, I would say, liberal is just too weak, leftism, and it's messing our kids' minds up. And so how can we stop this? And that's, I think, the nut of what this conference is about. It's August 10th through the 11th. And by the way, Dr. Kinger is, of course, a central part of this. And if you would like to go or send your kids, it's Capital Ideas. You can sign up at event.bright. It's capitalideas.eventbrite.com. And we'll put that on our Facebook page. Dr. Kinger is the keynote speaker on speaking on faith. And the title is Speaking on Faith, Freedom, and Higher Education. And Paul, give us the nut of that. What is it you're, give us a preview of what you're going to say in that address.
Well, you know, Sandy, for one thing, higher education has been separated from the notions of faith and freedom. And to the extent that freedom is even talked about at all, it's talked about in a way that's so completely separated from faith that freedom is nothing like the founders' original understanding of what freedom was meant to be. And it's certainly not a biblical understanding of freedom. I mean, it's Galatians 5:14, I believe, that says you were made for freedom, but do not use your freedom as opportunities for the flesh, right? Rather, use it to serve one another, to love one another. And this idea that freedom is about, you know, doing whatever you want at any time, and even coming up with your own definitions of freedom. The idea that you can redefine God's precepts, the biblical natural law, for everything from marriage to family to gender to sexuality. I mean, that is not the founder's conception of freedom. And also, Sandy, when it comes to higher education, I mean, colleges, some of the most radical today, like Columbia University, Harvard, they were founded by Christians with religious missions and messages. Yeah, they wouldn't recognize our universities today. And instead, our universities today are teaching things like critical theory, which is their name for cultural Marxism, gender theory. And, you know, the spirit there isn't the spirit of the Gospels, but as Marx put it, you know, calling for, quote, the ruthless criticism of all that exists, unquote.
Wow.
So, I mean, we're in a mess today. And, yeah, we're going to talk about a lot at that conference, but I'm afraid I don't have an answer as to how to turn it around. Although I would tell people, you know, listening on this station and this network, a really good place to start is to please quit sending your children and grandchildren to these colleges that destroy their minds and poison their souls. And you know, there are not a lot of good options out there, but if you look, you know, there are a few dozen colleges that are out there. You know, my college, Grove City, Hillsdale is another one. Patrick Henry is another one. Franciscan University, that's another. So they're out there. But, you know, don't just go sending Johnny or Susie to the school that you went to in the 60s where you met your spouse and held hands on the quad, because it's not like that anymore, believe me.
No, it isn't. And let me also say that Grove City is partnering with the National Association of Scholars, which I actually belong to that myself. I think they're a great organization, and they're doing some great work to try to reform higher education. I want to give the who should come to this, Paul?
Okay. Yeah, well, I would say I believe it's open to anybody who wants to sign up and wants to register. But if you have any interest at all in government overreach on education, and these kind of issues that I'm talking about right now, I'd say anybody with an interest in that. I often think, Sandy, that if conservatives ran the universities and turned them into bastions of conservatism, where 80 to 90% of the faculty self-identified as conservative and less than 10% identified as liberal, every liberal in Congress would be trying to shut them down right now, right? But instead, they become basically feeder systems for the people who run Google and social media and other elements of education, our media, and wherever else. I mean, you have this incredible situation where you have these modern universities that tout diversity, and they are the least diverse places or industry or whatever on the planet. I mean, we're talking less than 10% are conservative. The vast majority are radical, liberal, leftist, fundamental transformers, human nature redefiners. You know, these are the people that are truly changing. These are the cultural revolutionaries that have really redefined America. And the liberals in Congress love it that way. And they love the fact that so many parents obliviously send their lifetime savings and their students to these campuses where they're completely indoctrinated.
Well, I have to tell people publicly that I have begged you privately to stay in stay a professor till my grandchildren can get to Grove City because you are a jewel. You really are, Dr. Kinger. Let me just repeat that if people want to go to this event, it's Capital Ideas Event. Capitalideas.eventbrite.com. Capitalideas.eventbrite.com. We'll put it on our Facebook page. All right, so, Paul, let's talk about what your bailiwick is. We won't have long, but we can at least touch on it. This meeting in Helsinki was, I know, of particular interest to you because of your background and knowledge, and you wrote an article responding to a comment by Senator John McCain. Let me read his comment, and then I want you to respond to it because you write this in your opening paragraph. Senator John McCain described the Trump-Putin press conference in Helsinki as, quote, one of the most disgraceful performances by an American president in memory. No prior president, insisted McCain, has ever abased himself more abjectly before a tyrant. You disagree, sir. So what do we need to know?
Well, with all due respect to Senator McCain, he clearly doesn't know a lot about history, the history of U.S.-Soviet relations and presidents meeting with Russian dictators, because all you got to do is go to the very first of those, and that's FDR with Stalin. In fact, you could pick any of a number of meetings between FDR and Stalin, any number of summits, conferences, any number of letters exchanged between the two, or letters exchanged between FDR and Churchill, where FDR is saying to Churchill, "Oh, Winston, you and I and UJ," he's calling Stalin Uncle Joe, UJ. We actually have letters, Sandy, where he takes his term of endearment for Stalin, FDR, Uncle Joe, and crunches it down to an acronym, UJ, which is like his lovely little cutesy phrase for the dictator in which he saw. He said, Stalin taught us all something about the way in which a Christian gentleman should behave. And he was wondering why Stalin was such a wonderful Christian gentleman. And FDR thought, maybe it was his time in seminary that taught him that. That's how terribly deluded FDR was about Stalin. And you hear people all the time today say, well, he was, he had to hold the hand with the devil in order to cross the bridge. He was trying to win World War II. He knew how bad Stalin was. No. FDR liked Stalin. He trusted him. And as he said after the Tehran conference, which was even before the Yalta conference, he said, I believe that if I give Stalin everything that I possibly can, everything that he wants, and I ask for nothing in return, and he used the term noblesse oblige, he said, I believe Stalin will work with me for a world of democracy and peace. And that quote's off the top of my head. I've used it so many times. People can read it verbatim in the American Spectator article. And by the way, I think that quote first appeared in Life magazine in 1948. He was telling that to William Bullitt, his first Soviet ambassador, FDR was. But he believed that Stalin would actually work. See, believed that Stalin was a Democrat, a small D Democrat, who would work with him for a world of democracy and peace.
And it wasn't. And it wasn't because he hadn't been warned. You talk about his aide William Bullitt, who filled him in on that and tried to dissuade him. But we only have a couple of minutes left, Paul. Can you just quickly give us a couple of more examples of presidents who sort of made fools of themselves with Russian leaders?
Yeah, well, Jimmy Carter giving Leonid Brezhnev a double smooch on the cheeks when those two met together at their conference in Vienna in 1979. JFK at Vienna in June 1961, he met with Khrushchev, and James Scotty Reston, the New York Times reporter, said to JFK, he said, "Hey, how did it go?" And JFK said, "It was the worst thing of my life. It was terrible. He savaged me. He rolled right over me. He thinks I'm weak." And within just a few weeks after that, Sandy, the Soviets were building the Berlin Wall in Berlin. They were sending missiles off to Cuba. Ford at Helsinki with Leonid Brezhnev and the awful Helsinki Accords, which created a human rights agreement that was what Reagan called a sham and a farce. So, Senator McCain here, he doesn't know his history. I'm critical, too, of what Donald Trump said in that press conference. So was Trump, which is why he corrected himself a few days later. But he didn't say anything there nearly as bad as what several other presidents have done.
And let me just say that Paul's article in The Spectator will put on our Facebook page, the one he's talking about now. It's called Moscow's Presidential Jackasses and Bootlickers. I can't talk this morning.
Moscow's, you don't usually use that term, I imagine.
That's true. Bootlicker. I just that's tripped right one. Over it. But we have to add one more thing, because, Paul, this has been kind of an issue. I've brought this up this week because I know I interviewed Herb Romanstein. I think you know him, too. I think he's gone now. I think he's dead now. But he's the first person that told me about the Venona files and the Edward Kennedy reach out to Moscow. Just say a word about that. You have about a minute left, if you could.
Oh, boy, I could talk about that one all day. But just, very quickly. So there is a May 14th, 1983 KGB letter, and I published this in English and Russian in my book, Dupes. And it is a letter from the head of the KGB, Viktor Chebrikov, to the head of the Soviet Union, Yuri Andropov. And it's about a private confidential offer from Ted Kennedy directly to Andropov. And the letter says Kennedy is, quote, very impressed, quote unquote, with Andropov. And it's to work against Reagan in 1983-84, with Reagan's reelection coming up. And Kennedy clearly communicates there that he sees Reagan and Reagan's belligerence as a threat to peace. Not the Soviets, but Reagan. And it's all set within the context, Sandy, of Reagan's 1984 election campaign. And that was never exposed by our media. And I published it first, I think, in 2006, and then again in 2010. I published it when Kennedy was alive. And they never asked Kennedy about it. Never.
Yeah. Well, and so when some listeners of mine tried to find it, they couldn't find it and they didn't believe it. So that's why I wanted you to sort of put the icing on the cake, the dot the I, whatever. But let me just say, Dr. Paul Kinger is a professor at Grove City College. The conference is August 10th and 11th. Government Overreach and Higher Education. Go to capitalideas.eventbrite.com to make your reservation. And Paul Kinger has written so many great books. Dupes is one he just mentioned. We'll put his articles on our Facebook page. I think that covers it. Paul, have a great weekend, and thank you so much for joining us.
All right, Sandy, anytime.
Okay. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.